We've got someone who I've known for a long time, very talented, Dr. Michael Tiger. And he is West Hartford's, he's affiliated with St. Francis Hospital, a terrific surgeon, and he happens to be a pilot, too.
Well, and Brad, we all know what happened a week ago with that helicopter crash in the East River. Five people killed, only the pilot survived. And Dr. Tiger's in our Touch Points Rehab interview chair this morning. Doctor, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Doctor, what do we know about what actually happened in that specific helicopter crash?
Well, there are things we know and there are things we don't know. I don't want to speculate about the cause of the aircraft losing its ability to fly and to come down into the river. That's under investigation. There have been some speculations, and one thing I've learned is that it's really not correct to make suppositions before all the data is in. But we do know that the harnesses that these five unfortunate passengers were in were very difficult to release. And I think that's probably going to be the cause of why the passengers drowned. The pilot was able to get out. The release was in the back of the harness rather than in the front.
Wow. Well, when
a little bit unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it is unusual. When these passengers get on a helicopter, are they instructed much as we are instructed when we get on a plane? What happens? What we should do in the case of an emergency?
Well, the answer is they should be, and I'm going to assume that they were prepped beforehand. You can imagine this is a crisis situation and everybody's in a panic sort of mode. I understand there was even a release knife that might have been available to them to cut the harnesses. These were open door flights and they were designed to have a better visibility for photo ops. So with the doors open, I think the concept is to have these people buckled in and not have a accidental release where they could have if the buckles were in the front. So I think because of the type of flight, it would be an unusual sort of harness that they felt was necessary to use. And unfortunately, it proved fatal for these folks.
Now, of course, this does not affect the pilot, but the plane turned over. Is that correct?
The helicopter.
The helicopter turned over.
It did. I looked at the videos carefully, and it came down in a configuration called auto-rotation. I think it lost its engine power, but was able to come down in a relatively good, controlled fashion. But then it flipped over to the side. I think if they were able to get out of their harnesses, they would have been able to survive the way the pilot did. But the difficulty was the ability to release quickly and effectively to get out of their harnesses.
And can you imagine
the situation?
Can you imagine the panic that they must have felt because they couldn't get out of those harnesses?
Of course, and panic makes everything magnitudes worse, of course.
Well, do we know if, in fact, they were conscious on impact?
As I understand, there were three that were resuscitated, brought to the hospital, but died either en route or in the hospital. So I think all five probably survived the crash. And the way the helicopter came down, it looked like a pretty soft landing, all things considered. Mm-hmm. But it was the hypothermia of the water and the inability to get out of the harnesses that caused such a difficulty.
And you're saying the pilot's release was in the front?
That would be my assumption. The pilot who is in control of the aircraft would have a regular release the way any sort of passenger in a normal aircraft would have. The difference in this particular flight was that the doors were open. Now, I know that this sort of style is not universal. There have been news reports of other companies that have front release harnesses with open doors, but I think this company decided that from a safety point of view, it would be better not to have the accidental release, and that's why these harnesses released in the back.
Okay, Doctor, hang in there just a second. Brad, we have a traffic update, yes, and then we're
coming
back
up
with our guest.
Dr. Michael Teeger, our special guest. He is with the St. Francis Hospital, but also a pilot, and really knows the ropes when it comes to that. I wanted to ask you just a couple of questions, Doctor, about the helicopter. Is a helicopter, is it difficult to fly one?
Well, I think the answer, Brad, without a question, is yes. It certainly takes a lot of skill and practice. I don't fly helicopters myself, but I'm in contact with many helicopter pilots, and the skills require constant practice and updating of skills, sure.
You do, however, pilots do come to you for physicals, I believe, don't they?
Well, that's one of the benefits of my job. I am an aviation medical examiner, and as you may know, all pilots need physical exams on a routine basis just to be sure they're physically fit. So over the years, I've accumulated close to 800 pilots in the greater Connecticut area, both
wow,
fixed wings and helicopter pilots, and that gives me an opportunity to really survey the territory. In fact, just after this crash, I did have an opportunity to talk with a helicopter pilot who knew the pilot of this crash personally, and he was an instructor, highly qualified. I think the fact that the copter came down in a safe configuration the way it did is a testament to his skill.
I mean, it takes great skill, as we saw, by the way, with Pilot Sullivan on that aircraft years ago in New York. But it takes tremendous skill to pilot a craft of any kind, whether it be a 727 or a helicopter, to make a soft landing. It's a tremendous amount of skill, Doctor.
Of course. And, of course, pilots are trained for the eventuality of an engine failure. I mentioned the auto rotation phenomenon. These helicopters just don't fall out of the sky. It's a controlled descent. And I think he hit the water fairly softly. So that were the harness not the issue, the passengers would probably have survived the impact.
You know, Dr. Teeger, when you think of helicopters, when you think of those who have been in combat, it is incredible. It must be incredible for five or six to be in one chopper, and they go in on an attack and go down low. It's got to be just incredible that way.
Well, I think it's an absolute marvel. I'm not a helicopter fan myself, but I certainly respect the aircraft for its abilities and also the safety. If anything, Brad, I think the one thing we should let your listeners know is that aviation, despite these crafts, is still a safe and secure way for travel. The amount of control and care that the FAA puts into the safety issues is remarkable. Certainly doesn't come close to the automobile standards that we have. And even though these accidents are unfortunate, what will happen is that regulations will arise from these tragedies to make aviation even safer with rules and regulations that need to be followed.
Well, what do you think will emerge from this tragedy? What kind of regulation or regulations, Doctor?
Well, certainly there will be a very serious discussion about the ability of people to be able to get out of these harnesses and whether the rear release harnesses will actually be used in the future. I would be a little uncomfortable having an open door flight and having the release the way we're used to in our car seat belts, where an elbow by accident could release the seat belt. But something that would make it much easier for a passenger to get out in an emergency, I'm certain will arise from this event.
You say you're not a fan of helicopters. Why is that?
Yeah. It's only a personal feel. I enjoy the thrust of a fixed-wing airplane,
right,
and the ability to go forward.
I mean, and you are a pilot, correct?
I am a flight instructor, and I've been flying for almost 32 years now, yes.
Wow.
And explain to our audience why flight is still the safest mode of travel.
Well, that's statistically correct, that the number of flight hours, the number of accidents that occur in those flight hours is extraordinarily low compared to automobile accidents. And the FAA is really very strict as far as rules and regulations. Of course, with anything mechanical and human factors, there's always the possibility for mistakes. And in general aviation, amazingly, people will even run out of fuel while they're flying. So there is always the human factor, but engines are highly dependable. The rules that govern what pilots can and cannot do are very strict. And the watchdog, the regulatory agencies, if you make a mistake, are pretty strict. I've known pilots who have made mistakes and their pilot licenses are taken away because they make the mistake. So there is a governing board that rules what happens in the skies, and I think I certainly feel safer flying my airplane than I do driving home from the airport.
Wow. Really?
Doctor, have you ever had any close calls in the air?
Luckily, I have not. I've lost a radio because of an electrical failure. But even then, there are procedures that we are trained to learn that would take you safely to an airport. So I haven't had any engine failures or close calls, and I feel very comfortable in flying wherever.
Now, you have, of course, been with so many pilots. What is it? Is there a typical person that likes to fly? I've often wanted to ask a pilot that question. Is there a particular person that likes to fly?
I think that's a great question. There are over 400,000 pilots that are active in the United States. If you ask me about airline pilots, because I see many, these fellows are very methodical, and they look at their flying as a serious career. So they don't deviate. They don't take chances. They are strictly by the book people. Many of them are military. Of course, if you go to the general aviation territory, there are people who like to do aerobatics. There are people who like to use sport airplanes for the romance of flying. I personally like the precision of instrument flying, where you have a lot of high technology things that give you a very precise capability of going where you want to go. Everybody has their own particular interests. But I think from an airline point of view or from a corporate point of view, I'm very impressed with these guys. They know what they're doing. And I'm very comfortable in certifying them to fly.
You know, again, when you take a look at the history, you wonder how, like World War One, and when World War Two, then too, these planes they were flying. I mean, you just say, my gosh, how did they do it? But they did.
If you watch technology development, aviation is just fascinating to watch. We know the planes can stay up. The basic aerodynamics are known. But now we're talking about efficiency and speed and ability to carry many people over distances. The navigational technology is absolutely precise and mind-blowing how exciting it is to be in that system where you can, it's hard to get lost anymore. Probably the major difficulty that pilots face now still remains the weather, as far as snowstorms and wind. And when you think about that, they still are able to have a tremendous amount of success in getting people where they want to go. And while we complain sometimes about the cancellations in flight because of weather, they still are able to do a yeoman's job as far as getting people through very difficult weather conditions.
No question.
I'm very impressed.
No question.
Well, thank you, Doctor, very much for spending some time with Dan and myself this morning, and for your work at St. Francis Hospital and your work as a pilot. And we appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thanks, Doctor.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Take care.